I am recused from this case. Judge Wright will rejoin the court, and he will preside on this particular case, and Judge Irwin will also be sitting with the court.
In the last case is State versus Phelps. The parties may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Smith. My name is Kyle Amelia, Chief Deputy Public Defender with the Madison County Public Defender's Office, and along with Melissa Wentling, Madison County Public Defender, we represent the appellant, David Phelps. This comes on for a appeal from a denial without an evidentiary hearing of Mr. Phelps' post-conviction appeal. The appeal was filed in the district court on September 3rd, 2012. A records hearing was held where the court took judicial notice of the record on September 28th, 2012, and a written order denying the motion without an evidentiary hearing was filed on October 3rd. The court, in its order, decided that denied the motion on several counts, including that Mr. Phelps had not alleged facts specific enough that, if proven, would constitute an infringement of his constitutional rights. Additionally, the court decided that the motion was procedurally barred, given that Mr. Phelps had previously filed two post-conviction motions prior. Now, this case is a simple issue before the court today. Is Mr. Phelps entitled to an evidentiary hearing? And I believe the answer to that question is yes. The three issues assigned on appeal were that the lower court erred, that the motion was not procedurally barred; two, the lower court erred in failing to find that he pled facts sufficient to warrant an evidentiary hearing. If proven, they would constitute the infringement of his constitutional rights. And three, that the lower court erred in failing to appoint an attorney for the post-conviction proceeding. First off,
Counsel, what was the date that this judgment of conviction became final?
The judgment of conviction became final. I'm not sure of the exact month and day, but I believe it was 1994 when the direct appeal was decided. The direct appeal was denied. The main issues in the direct appeal were a motion to suppress statements at the trial. The first post-conviction motion was on ineffective assistance of counsel, prosecutorial misconduct, and a trial misconduct. The second post-conviction motion was for, under State v. Conover, appealing the sentence of life without parole. Both of those were denied by the district court and were not appealed to the Court of Appeals.
Now, and when did this diary come to light? When was that discovered?
Your Honor, Mr. Phelps alleged in his post-conviction motion that the diary first came to light between March 5 and March 7 of 2012. Mr. Phelps became aware from his motion from a newspaper reporter and then also from the records hearing, he alleged that as well. That was the first time the diary was discovered. He filed his motion for post-conviction verification in September of that year, 5 months later, well within the 1-year statute of limitations for filing post-conviction motions on new evidence. Since he filed within the 1 year with new evidence, and the diary is new evidence, the extensive record contains no allusion or mention of Jean Bacchus, her farm, or anybody related to her committing these crimes.
So Mr. Phelps is not alleging here that he was deprived of some constitutional right during the proceedings which led up to the judgment of conviction?
In this post-conviction, we're not alleging any violations of the trial. The violation, that constitutional violation that Mr. Phelps is alleging, is that he is innocent of this crime.
That's not a constitutional violation, is it?
Your Honor, I would disagree respectfully that I believe this court said in Lauder, which is cited in...
If that were the case, we would have every single person in the state penitentiary filing a post-conviction motion based on the fact that they were innocent.
Well, I think, as Lauder indicated, when there's new evidence that was previously unavailable or unknown that indicates a colorable showing, I believe is what the...
Of innocence, you mean?
A colorable showing of innocence, excuse me, of actual innocence, that may be a constitutional violation. And I think in Lauder, the court indicated that with the right case, that would be a situation. I think here...
Is the test a colorable showing or a highly persuasive showing?
Well, I would think... I'm unsure of the exact precedent, but I would think that the showing, given the nature of the proceeding before the district court, would be a colorable showing. And I think in Ex Parte Thule, which is also cited in my brief, which is the Texas Court of Appeals, they held that it was colorable because the burden to show facts at a records hearing in a post-conviction motion would be unbearably high for the movement, given that he doesn't have the opportunity to put any of this evidence before the court.
Well, would you have another remedy available besides a post-conviction action?
Well, if the court is alluding to the writ of error quorum nobis, which the state alleges in its brief is the correct remedy, that is a possible remedy, but that remedy is only available if there's no other options available for a defendant. In this situation...
Why do you have a right to bring a third motion for post-conviction relief based on a conviction that was rendered in 1994?
Well, the statute itself indicates successive motions. Additionally, the court has held that successive motions are allowed if it's new evidence, and the statute says that when new evidence is discovered that was previously unavailable and could not have been discovered through the party's due diligence and their own efforts prior to the evidence, they have 1 year to file that motion. In this situation, the diary wasn't discovered till March. He filed the motion in September. He met the statute of limitations. The previous two post-conviction motions dealt nothing with the diary or with the allegations that Ms. Bacchus committed the kidnapping. They also dealt with nothing involving...
So what is your constitutional claim?
Our constitutional claim is that in a situation when there is a showing of actual innocence, that is a constitutional violation when he's held in prison.
What section or provision of the Constitution?
It violates, Your Honor, it violates his due process claim to be free from incarceration. It violates, I believe, in the Mr. Phelps' own motion, I think he said the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 14th amendments of the Constitution. I think it's primarily a due process claim in that a person has a substantive right to be free from incarceration when innocent. And in this case,
that's a 5th Amendment as implemented by the 14th Amendment?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So are you abandoning the 4th and 6th Amendments?
No, not entirely, Your Honor.
Well, perhaps you could explain then which provisions from those broad terms you think applies.
Well, Your Honor, the main point is the right to be innocent. And And I think we're getting into the question of whether he is actually innocent or...
I don't remember reading the right to be innocent in any of those constitutional amendments. Perhaps you can tie this together for me.
Well, Your Honor, the... I'm losing my... I'm forgetting myself right now on those exact wordings of those amendments. But moving on, the key issue here is that Mr. Phelps was only required to allege specific facts and then provide a colorable showing of a constitutional violation. I think he's done that in that the specific facts that he's alleged are that somebody else committed the crime, that Gene Bacchus specifically committed the crime, that it was kidnapped Ms. Cutshall as well as three other girls and took her to their farm in Chambers.
What tangible evidence were you prepared to offer had you been given a hearing on this?
Well, the diary is the new evidence that was that came to light. That's the new evidence that Mr. Phelps discovered.
Where is the diary, and who said there was a diary?
Well, Mr. Phelps alleged there was a diary. In the records hearing, there is some statements by the state that it exists and it's in their possession. However, that's not in the record or the files of the court, and it's not for the court to decide whether that's true or accurate or acceptable or not, or hearsay or not.
Have you made an allegation that the state has withheld exculpatory evidence?
We have not. The diary was not, I believe, in possession of the state at the time of trial. I think it came to light and came to the state around that March 5th allegation. The purpose of the records hearing is to determine whether that's admissible or not. Given that this is, we'd ask that it be remanded with directions to hold an evidentiary hearing and order an attorney. Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Phelps did not appear in the district court nor in this court as an innocent person. He's a convicted individual. He's a convicted individual who had a fair trial, and there are no constitutional claims that his trial was anything but fair. He filed a post-conviction motion. Counsel's brief starts off that this was a appeal from a post-conviction proceeding. Post-conviction is a statutory remedy. It's available only for prejudicial constitutional violations. And the defendant, our bottom line is, the defendant did not allege any facts showing a constitutional violation. At best, what he has alleged is a freestanding claim of actual innocence. And that is not a constitutional violation under the U.S. Supreme Court precedent in Herrera v. Collins. This court's most recent discussion of freestanding constitutional claims in post-conviction proceedings is State v. Edwards, in which this court recognizes there is a possibility that a persuasive claim of actual innocence in a post-conviction proceeding might show a constitutional violation. The court went on to indicate that incarceration without the opportunity to present newly discovered evidence could be a denial of due process, either procedural or substantive. And it also stated a strong demonstration of actual innocence would be required. The U.S. Supreme Court in Herrera v. Collins used the term extraordinarily high. Now, I think what Edwards talks about the possibility is if the defendant is in fact actually innocent, has newly discovered evidence showing he's actually innocent.
That's the DNA case.
That was a DNA case.
I mean, that is the DNA case if they can show actual innocence.
Yeah, and also, and that the law doesn't give him any opportunity whatsoever to show that actual innocence, then Edwards talks about that could possibly be a constitutional due process violation.
Well, in this case, it's too late for Phelps to
request a new trial based upon newly discovered evidence, and your argument is that he doesn't have a post-conviction claim, so what other remedy could he have?
Well, the reason I would submit he doesn't have a post-conviction claim is because Nebraska law does give him an opportunity to present newly discovered evidence that would show that he, in fact, is innocent. That's the writ of error coram nobis. And the writ of coram nobis exists for the sole purpose that...
Is this a common law remedy?
It's a common law remedy, but Nebraska law recognizes it. And if you can show factual innocence, it's not a credibility issue, you can show, in fact, you are innocent, you do have a remedy of coram nobis, and thus under the State v. Edwards, if you take the assumption that there may be a constitutional due process violation, if you can prove actual innocence, but you don't have any procedure to do it, there is no due process violation here because under Nebraska law, you do have an opportunity. It's a writ of error coram nobis. And if a defendant is going to come in and say, look, I can prove myself innocent.
Are you conceding he can turn around and file that writ now?
I would concede he's got the right to file the writ. Whether he could make the allegations to get it is another issue, because I think what the Diaz case does in explaining the writ is such that it must be an error of fact that would have prevented a conviction. It's not something that's a credibility thing where you get to rehash your guilt or innocence. You must come in with very strong evidence to show that, in fact, I am innocent, no doubt about it, and the writ of error coram nobis is very limited, and it is very limited for those specific cases in which we don't want to hold guilty people in jail when they, in fact, can show they're innocent and there's no other way to do it. That's the purpose for a writ of error coram nobis. Thus, his due process claim, if he has one, goes away because he does have that opportunity if he wants to show I am, in fact, innocent. He can make the claim. I would still say if he makes it, he's got a pretty tall order because what he has alleged here, I would submit, doesn't prove actual innocence. He just says I was wrongfully convicted. That's not actual innocence. And he would have to come in with very, very strong evidence, and I would submit some diary probably isn't going to cut it, but he does, at least what Edwards talks about, is due process is being deprived the opportunity to present newly discovered evidence. That's his opportunity, and if he thinks this is good enough evidence, that's his opportunity. He may go file that, he may get denied, we may be back here on an appeal from a denial of a writ of error coram nobis, but that, there is no constitutional violation here. Since it's a statutory remedy under post-conviction, and it must be a constitutional violation, he hasn't alleged a constitutional violation, and so the district court should be affirmed.
I know there's no rebuttal time left. Do you have anything you want to add in 1 minute?
Your Honor, the only thing I would add is that if Mr. Smith is, if the state is alleging that it should be an error coram nobis, a writ of error coram nobis, excuse me, that the court will treat it as what it is as opposed to what it's titled. And if the post-conviction remedy is not available and it is barred by procedural or other means for a post-conviction relief, then the writ of error coram nobis would be available, then the court would
read it as
such.
Be careful what you ask for.
Well, Your Honor, I think it is a post-conviction, but regardless, if it's a post-conviction, he was entitled to a hearing. If it's an error coram nobis, the hearing is mandatory. And all Mr. Phelps is asking for is an evidentiary hearing to present these issues to a district court to decide whether there is actually a violation that warrants relief or not. Mr. Phelps didn't get that opportunity, and as such, we'd ask the court to remand it for that evidentiary hearing and to appoint an attorney for it as well. Thank you.
That concludes the arguments for today. The parties are excused, and we are adjourned.